I've been thinking you're right.
I'm always right.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 28, The Bitch Is Back. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Arrieta, Sarah T. Putney.
It's okay, Dave. I think I put The Bitches Are Back somewhere in the copy. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
So we have some announcements. Would you like to hear them?
I would.
All right. Dave, what? Dave, come up with your comeback for The Bitch Is Back. Again with this, episode 21 is going to be Luke Perry, RIP, in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie that's available to rent or buy on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play, among other places. If you would like to watch along with us, our episode on that will be dropping on Friday, October 30th, a.k.a. All Hallows Eve, a.k.a. Mischief Night.
Right. So the reason this is happening is we hit our $1,200 level, which means...
Woo!
Yeah, thank you. So in addition to now doing 3 bonus episodes every month of the kind that we've been doing all along, and that's starting immediately... We also just announced yet another perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up, and that is we're going to be adding an additional monthly mini episode, and that's going to be called Again With Them, because it'll be a digest of 90210MG, Tori Spelling and Jenny Garth's upcoming episode-by-episode podcast on the show. Basically, once a month, we will say what happened that month on their podcast. So even though we could... just be irritated that they're trying to be the new office ladies. Instead, we're going to make lemons out of lemonade. And since their podcast starts November 9th, we will deliver our first recap of their recap late next month. So you can find all of this at our Patreon, which is patreon.com/againwiththis. Before we get into The Bitches Back, we should also mention this was previously a canon submission on our sister podcast, Extra Hot Great. Our friend Heather Cox of Go Fug Yourself presented this very ably many years ago.
Indeed.
So we will also link to that episode of Extra Hot Great so you can listen to her take on this as well. But it was great. And it was also great to revisit this episode because this episode is, guess what? Great. Let's start out with our C-plot. Allison and Billy, wedding planner stuff.
No.
Well, it's a C plot for a reason. Yeah. Allison's time with Dr. Miller has made her so horny that she's not just visibly feeling herself while she gets ready for work in the morning. She comes into the bedroom to start pawing at Billy and tell him she's decided to cancel the sex blackout, effective immediately. When Billy gets home from work that night, Allison stiffly tells him that her parents want to hire a local wedding planner for them. Billy thought they were just going to have a small ceremony, no big production, and she knows, but she can't say no to her parents, and anyway, the bride's parents are supposed to throw the wedding. And she starts kissing him, and he forgets his objections and puts her up on the countertop in the kitchen. This is by far the horniest she has ever been, by the way, and I have to ask, is she still in therapy or not? Because I feel like they kind of left it unresolved at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I guess we're supposed to think, like, she has a lot to think about on her own.
Right.
Because they couldn't keep paying that guy. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, I guess we'll see in the episodes ahead if he comes back.
Yeah.
Anyway. Then Allison and Billy are meeting with the wedding planner, Sheila, for lunch. And knowing how things end up with Allison and her dad, this is brutal. Clip 2.
So, kids, I have put together weddings fast before, but this is going to be a new record. Luckily, Allison, your father's ponied up quite a handsome fee, which will certainly help. When I spoke to him on the phone, he was explicit about one thing. Only the best for my little girl. He must love you very much. Yeah.
The woman they have hired to play Sheila has the longest gums and shortest teeth in the world. So every time she smiles, it's super creepy. And good job, because she's really off-putting.
Yeah.
So Allison starts to say they don't want to get too fancy with this, but Sheila cuts her off to say it's Billy and Allison's day, but that they have to do everything by end of day tomorrow that normally takes weeks. So they'll have to make decisions quickly, but the decisions will be theirs. Sure. And as soon as Allison and Billy both agree, Sheila immediately adds they'll also have to trust her because she knows what she's talking about. And here we go. Clip three.
One thing that is important to us is the food.
Wasn't this lamb terrific? And the couscous delicious? What I like about this place is they do flavors, but they're not too fussy for a man's taste. What do you think, William? You're a meat and potatoes kind of guy, aren't you?
It's Billy. And yeah, it was good. Meaty.
Exactly. That's why I met you here. These people do weddings like you wouldn't believe. They'd be perfect, don't you think, Allison?
Well...
I'd stand by your man on this one, dear. Now, I'll get some menus for you to look at, and we can cross this decision off our list. Be right back.
Hater.
What are you talking about? She's great.
She's taking over. And she talks too fast.
She said the decisions are ours.
Oh, right. Mr. Meat and Potatoes.
Well, your dad's paying for her, so we might as well give her a chance.
Stand by your man. What a load.
Literally the most I've ever liked, Alice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they do flavors, but they're not too fussy. Like, what restaurant doesn't do flavors? Wait, restaurant Sarah likes because institutional starch. But other than that.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, you don't want to end up with a delicious cumin situation on your hands where you're just overwhelmed by the flavor etude.
That's true. Also, by the way, I am also an institutional starch guy. I ordered Boston Market the other night and got a bowl with potatoes and corn and chicken, and it was also supposed to come with gravy, and for some reason they forgot the corn and the gravy, and did I eat it anyway? Yes, I did.
Yeah. I mean, was still good. Look. You can like spicy and bland things.
It's true.
It's allowed.
Over to Jane's place, speaking of bland, where she shows Sheila the wedding gown in progress.
You're welcome.
Billy is also standing right there, so much for that tradition, I guess. Allison adds that Jane has her own design studio if any of Sheila's other clients want to hit her up, and Sheila's like, maybe, before calling Billy William again and saying they have to go. And outside, where Jane can probably still totally hear them through the window or door, Sheila tells Allison she must be kidding with that tragic, outdated eggshell dress, which isn't going to go with anything else that Sheila has planned. And Allison pushes back, so Sheila drops it and moves on to the Italian tux they need to get William fitted for tomorrow, ignoring his informing her he prefers to be called Billy before racing off to a bakery. And the next day, Billy describes the reception as the part of the wedding where the two of them are going to thank everyone for coming and then duck out early, something they can do at any banquet hall in the city. Allison doesn't disagree, but if they don't choose one before Sheila gets there, they'll be stuck with whichever one she bullies them into when she arrives and they settle on someplace. And when there's a knock at the door, they assume it's Sheila, but it's Jane, kind of pissed off that they seem to have had Sheila fire her after all the work that she put into Allison's gown. Now, obviously, this is the first that Allison's hearing about it, and she assures Jane she'll be wearing her dress, not one that, as Sheila claimed, looks like Caroline Kennedy's. And that's when Sheila comes in, apparently thinking she had beaten Allison down enough that Allison would have just gone along with this scumbaggery, but obviously she doesn't. And this is the last straw that causes Billy to fire her. And then they all go to Shooters. And after that, Allison and Billy have agreed to have the wedding in the courtyard. Hey, maybe they can exchange their vows on the exact spot where Jake likes to work on his motorcycle. They are derpily excited or possibly drunk in clip four.
Oh, it'll be beautiful here. We'll hang some lights. We'll have each other. We don't need anything fancy.
Sounds good to me. We can have Shooters cater. We can have buffalo wings and those little fried onion rings they do.
That's perfect. We're getting married in the place we fell in love in front of all of our friends. This is the way it was meant to be.
Yeah, no dragon lady.
I saw her kiss you, you know.
No, you didn't.
Wait, what Elvis Costello song was playing when that happened? Like, what? Was that a scene that got cut, or is she just goofing?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are also people that are getting whatever the Shooters off-label version of a Bloomin' Onion is. A shake and shell it. I don't know. And they're like, yay, buy the sad pool with bike grease and Sydney. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Let's have our wedding beside the pool where Jane and Sydney were fighting in wedding gowns 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Cool. Moving on to our B plot. Sure is a lot of drama at this modeling agency working with D&D. At the beach, a volleyball court is set up and Joe is working with a sweet, very short model. Clip 5.
Sarah, you're doing great. Just great.
Sarah!
Cassidy Ray, you're not.
No.
I would say as a model, she's a great actress, but she's not that either. I mean,
no.
Bless her heart, and I, you know, wish her the best. But she's just, like, she's cute, and I'm sure she means well and is kind to animals.
She has a sweet face. She's very sweet looking, but she is so short. Like, she's so short.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's short, and then like another model comes in the shot who is a full head taller than her at least and has that Stephanie Romanoff look. Maybe it is Stephanie Romanoff, and like has cheekbones and looks Eastern European. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I get that it's tricky when you have like actors trying to play models and whatever. This is why shows about baseball don't work. The two things are hard enough separately, but yeah. But here we go with that.
Yeah. I mean, she has the look where you can imagine that she could have been on like YM in the late 80s.
Totally. Yeah.
But even by this time, like she couldn't have been on, like Sassy had already started to change the game for teen magazines. Like they were more model-y, they were more fashion-y than this. So she's she's not credible.
She's catalog. Yep.
For sure. Anyway, Joe cancels her to relax and have fun, and Sarah, looking excited, fishes that she thinks she looks gawky, but Joe assures her that if the pictures don't come out well, it'll be Joe's fault, and Sarah is reassured, and then we have a photo shoot montage. One of Joe's prompts is that the camera's Mel Gibson, so that has not aged so well, and all of the dresses, yeah. I don't understand what the story is. It's like a weird, like, southern store, you know, plantation kind of a thing, and she's in like a sleeveless thing with like a sheer pinafore over it. I mean, you can see it in the visual aids. It is crazy looking. It's
like, yeah,
this is not as
this is the kind of thing that actually in Sassy I feel like they would have tried.
Yeah,
like almost just to fuck with us, and it's like crochet. Like, wait, what? No, not really. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Anyway, after a while, Amanda shows up looking much more stylish. See that in the visual aids as well. And pulls Joe aside to yell at her in clip 6.
What are you doing hiring a girl from Models Inc? D&D never uses that agency. Never.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Well, it's your job to know what agency I use. Now get rid of her.
What?
Fire the Models Inc. girl now and promote one of the other ones.
I can't do that, Amanda.
What's her name?
Sarah Owens. Amanda, just calm down, all right?
Sarah Owens, can you come here, please? This is the last time I let you cast your own shoot.
Hi, what's up?
I'm Amanda Woodward, vice president at D&D. Do us a favor, would you? Change out of the dress and leave. You'll get paid for today.
What? What does she mean? Sarah, it's not you.
I mean you're fired.
What did I do?
You joined the wrong agency, kid. Now get changed and get out of here. Please.
You know, man, if I didn't need the job, I would just walk right now.
But you do, don't you? So you better get to it. Looks like a storm is coming in.
I don't get it.
I get it. Photographers cast models, clients don't cast them. Seems weird.
Yeah, what?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, there's this whole thing is very, again, it's like soapy machinations to get certain people in the same room as certain other people, but whatever. A showdown is coming. That makes absolutely no sense. We'll get into it.
one of our neighbors is mowing their lawn and stopping and starting their lawnmower every time they do a row of their grass. So if you're hearing that, I apologize. There's nothing I can do about it, but I'm just getting angry about how they're cutting their lawn right now. Like, just keep the lawnmower on, keep walking, don't yes. stop and have, like, was he having, is he snacking at the end of every row?
The next day at the office, a furious Bruce, even more furious than Dave about the lawn mowing, pulls Amanda into the conference room to yell at her in clip 7.
I got a little phone call from the owner and CEO of Models Inc. today. Seems she's very unhappy with us. You have any idea why?
Oh, they must represent the girl I had to replace yesterday. It was unfortunate, but necessary.
Where the hell do you get off firing a model from a D&D shoot because you don't like her agency? Huh? This isn't Woodward Advertising. This is D&D. This is my shop. I make the rules.
Bruce, let me explain. I just haven't found any quality clients represented by Models, Inc.
That's crap, and you know it. We ran a little records check after we got that phone call yesterday. You've effectively boycotted that agency. They demand an apology, and you're going to give it to them.
Is that really necessary? I'll start using their models if you want. I've got a catalog coming up.
You don't talk. You listen. We're having a meeting with them at the end of the day to see what we can do to repair this relationship. You'll be called into that meeting at the appropriate time, and I expect you to grovel. Oh. And if I hear of another incident anywhere close to this, you can find yourself another job. Got it?
Got it.
And I expect you to grovel because it's broadcast TV and I can't say eat shit.
Yeah. He is good in this scene, but it makes absolutely no sense that anyone would notice or care. Like,
yeah,
modeling agencies get functionally blackballed all the time if they're not what you need for your campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
If, for instance, Models Inc. were legitimately representing mostly fashion editorial, D&D would have no use for them, and it would be easily avoided.
Right.
Not to mention that the whole reason for this is reverse engineered and or retro engineered and kind of out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
we then see Amanda pacing nervously before getting called into her meeting with Models Inc. We see the agency's CEO's legs before panning up from them to her head, which belongs to Linda Gray from Dallas, already in pissy mood in clip 8.
Bruce, there is no excuse. This is not professional behavior, and you know it. Now, apology is fine, but I want the person responsible.
Hillary, this is Amanda. You wanted the person responsible. Well, here she is. And I believe she has something to say to you.
Amanda?
Hello, Mother.
Hello, Mother.
This must have been such a watershed moment when it happened. Like, it's so good.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, it was completely obscured by later events.
Sure.
Yeah. Hello, Mother was pretty good.
Brilliant. So after commercial, mother and daughter are outside. Hillary, for that is her name, apologizing for having made Amanda eat shit in front of her superiors. Not that she actually sounds that sorry about it. Hillary confirms that Amanda knew where she was all these years, and Amanda says that Palmer wanted to make sure Amanda had nothing to do with her. And smiling hopefully, Hillary says that business has a way of bringing people together. And blowing past Amanda's spectacular eye roll, Hillary adds that she was sorry to hear about Palmer's troubles, but unfortunately, he never believed in an honest day's work. And Amanda barks that they may be forced to work together, but Hillary better keep his name out of her mouth. I'm paraphrasing. She lost that right when she left the family. And as Amanda stomps off, Hillary follows, expositing that she left 20 years ago and can't make up that time. She wishes they could leave it in the past. And Amanda tartly says some things are permanent. They don't go away no matter how hard you try. But Hillary isn't done talking about it. Clip 9.
Look, Mandy, don't do this. I still remember that day. You were at school and I walked into your room. All those fashion dolls and the posters. And
and all those 12-year-old little girls' things. And I felt I would die at the thought of leaving you.
But you managed to do it anyway, didn't you?
There are things that you don't know. Your father's lawyers can...
I don't care, all right? I don't want a relationship with you. Good night.
Yeah.
I mean, A, good for her, but B, here is another show in the Darren Starverse that does not only doesn't know how seating and therapy works, but thinks that a 12-year-old is a little kid.
Like, yeah.
Their way of writing tweens on these shows is so bizarre. Like Erica, like making crafts.
Mm-hmm.
Like a baby and then getting her period. Like, not that some people don't get their periods young, but she's supposed to be 12 or 13. Like, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, at least now we know how old Amanda is supposed to be.
Right.
Not that that lines up with what the show has sort of been implying previous to this, but whatever. Like, 12 is not like still playing with, you know, like dolls. I don't know. It's weird. Right.
Well, fashion dolls would be like Barbies. So like maybe they would still be around, but yeah.
Right.
That's a weird detail to mention just because they were still in the rooms. Like, you know, you would see them on shelves perhaps, but it's not like she was playing with them.
Well, and also, I don't know, like at some point, if the reason were like you were being abused or Palmer was a problem in some other way, like I just feel like Amanda would have been had that communicated to her then, and she would have gone with her. I don't know.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Soapy.
Exactly. Like it would be so easy here to be like, your dad was doing crimes, except that then, you know, she didn't come back for her or take her with her. So, you know, you can't use that one really.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, the next day, Jake opens the door to Amanda's to Hillary, who has come looking for her. Amanda's not there, so Hillary introduces herself and explains who she is. Trying not to make it too awkward, Hillary checks that Amanda has told Jake how Hillary left the family, and Jake says that she did. And then he introduces himself, adding this, clip 10.
I don't live here. Amanda and I spend time together.
What?
Is she the kid? Is she the kid?
This is the weirdest old man writer euphemism for we are dating I have ever heard. We spend time together? Like, that's not even, it's not even like you're covering up we're fucking because, like, you're over there making dinner when she's not there. Like, clearly you're in a relationship. Like,
well, and it's not
weird.
Her grandmother.
Right.
Like, I don't live here. Like, who cares? It's the 90s. Who cares where you live?
Anyway, he says Amanda will be home soon and invites Hillary in to wait and have a glass of wine. And Hillary, the idiot, accepts as though Amanda was not quite clear the night before. Your funeral, lady. And as Jake pours, Hillary looks around at Amanda's decor and comments that Amanda's very lucky to have landed a man who cooks. And they talk a bit about that. And then she gets emotional and asks if she's okay. And with her mascara immediately starting to run, because she is also a soap opera pro, she gasps that as she looks around Amanda's home, she's just so proud of her and her great life, everything Hillary wanted for herself. And Jake invites her to sit down, but Hillary belatedly realizes that she should leave. Since Amanda would not like finding her there, way to show self-awareness and respect Amanda's boundaries. And then I have to stop praising her because she slides from that into self-pity. Clip 11.
Look, we spoke, and she is determined to hate me forever because I did a terrible thing when she was little. I thought if I could talk to her one more time and tell her how sorry I am, and tell her that every night I wish I could hold that little girl in my arms and make up for everything.
Hey, it's okay.
I just need a chance to explain.
Look. Don't worry. Maybe I could talk to her.
Mind your own business, Jake Defer.
Stay out of it.
don't do it.
Yeah, really.
It's not your place, which is pretty much what Amanda tells him when she gets home from work, but loud. She is not interested in Hillary's explanations, and it's not Jake's place. But then she goes further in clip 12.
Why do you care if I make up with her? Or what is it? I'm not good enough the way I am? You have to jump in and make me cozy with my mommy, make me a little softer? What did you think? That I go, oh, thank you for making me all whole again.
No. What is your problem? She told me you were working with each other.
She lies. That is what she does. Jake, I have opened up to you. That's not something I do easily. Hell, I don't do it at all. Because I can't stand being hurt. I can't stand it. I've told you things about myself, private things, and all I ask is that you promise to respect my feelings.
Of course I do.
Promise.
I promise. Amanda, come on.
Then don't ever mention her to me again.
You know, my parents aren't prizes either. My mom is a drunk. I don't know where my father is, but someday I still want to see him, talk to him. Try to understand him, not because what he did was right. Because, good or bad, he's a part of me.
I don't want to hear this.
She's your mother, Amanda. You can't run away from that.
I mean, really, I wanted the beginning of this clip because I thought it was really quite insightful that Amanda's like, so what? I can only be a battle axe because... You know, like you need to soften me so you can handle me as a woman. Like, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then Jake being like, well, you can't, you know, you can't run away from this part of your past. Like, why not? Her mother did. Fuck you. Yeah. Stay out of it.
Exactly. Like it's, you know, the answer to that is like, I'm estranged from my parents too. And I want a relationship with them someday. It's like, great. That's your choice. That's not my choice. Like, we are not the same. People are different. And like, this means nothing, you know?
Yeah.
It's fine for you. It's not required for her. Shut up and respect her choices, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, the beach photo shoot continues with a rehired Sarah running up to hug Joe and say she doesn't blame her for what happened. When she sits to get her makeup done, Joe asks about a bruise on her neck, and I guess Sarah is new to being domestically abused because she claims she fell down the stairs because she doesn't know that Joe has experience telling concerned friends lies like that herself. Sarah promises the mark will cover with makeup and everything's fine, and Joe is like, okay, but she's clearly suspicious. That's all we get of that for now. And that night, Amanda and Jake go out for dinner with Hillary and her Dave Coulier-ass looking boyfriend, Chaz. She can see in the visual.
Why? Like, does it really seem like a working / estrangement reconciliation dinner is the time to double?
No. Like, maybe with Jake, since he was the one who was like, I'll talk to her, but, like, leave Chaz out of it.
Oh, Chaz. Leave Chaz out of everything. His name is Chaz. No.
So, this is also when we learn that Amanda has a half-brother named David, whom she hardly knows, so she doesn't really care that he says hello.
David!
Amanda warns Hillary that she's not going to make a big deal about her just because she's chosen to show up again. And even as Hillary is saying that she'll settle for baby steps, Chaz starts running a nylon socked foot up Amanda's leg under the table. It's like those disgusting trouser socks that are like sheer. So gross on a man. You're not in a tuxedo. Wear a normal sock, you weirdo.
Yeah, gross.
But rather than embarrass him openly, Amanda decides to try and pull the plug on the evening, and Hillary starts yelping about how she's extended herself to Amanda and thinks that Amanda owes her a chance, and then fucking Chaz decides to weigh in clip 13.
Look, everybody, it's simple. We can all do our best to be a big, happy family, or you two can keep feuding, and it'll just get nastier. And Hillary knows a lot of people in the business. Not a good enemy to have.
If this is some kind of lame threat, mister, you're messing with the wrong couple of people.
Jake's right, Chaz. I can't force Amanda to be any closer to me than she wants. It's up to you.
Keep a leash on your boyfriend.
He won't say another word.
How about he just gets in a cab?
Yeah. Take your plate to the bar and shut the fuck up.
So weird. Anyway.
The tool.
There is unbelievably more Chaz in the next episode. But that's,
oh my God. Chaz Agonistes.
That's where we Chaz off for now.
Oh no.
Finally, our A plot. Ooh, boy.
Woo!
Strap in. Kimberly is considerably less dead than her mother let on. So, as Michael and Sydney walk on the beach in their robes with morning coffee, she tells him she's been thinking he's right. She has one more hotel party, but then she thinks she's going to retire from the madam business to be a doctor's wife and take care of him full time. He loves that idea. So she'll be home late that night, but when she gets back, they can start their new life. And they toss their mugs over their shoulders into the sand and start kissing. And why am I so heartbroken that their happiness is about to end? I don't know why, but I actually am. They're so good together, these actors. Oh, my God. So
sigh.
While he's hugging her, he looks up toward the house and sees a graceful figure walk out onto the deck. And he's far enough away that he can't quite make out who it is, though he says, no, it couldn't be. It seems like he has an idea. But when he looks back, the person is gone. And at the hospital, Michael tries to get Matt to empathize with his plight of seeing possibly Kimberly everywhere, saying his conscience must be bothering him. But Matt matter-of-factly replies, Michael doesn't have one of those. He's just overreacting. Michael asks whether Matt thinks Kimberly could still be alive, but Matt doesn't entertain this idea at all. Michael's just tired and stressed after his courtship with Sydney, and Michael decides Matt's probably right and he just needs some sleep. So Matt's in bed reading that, Michael is in bed reading that night when he hears something call Sydney's name. There's no answer, so he goes out to the living room, and as lightning illuminates the room, he sees someone by the front door, and he still thinks it's Sydney until he turns the light on and sees that it's Kimberly! And this is actually a situation where the cliche is appropriate, and he reacts as though he has seen a ghost. Clip 14.
It's nice to see you again, Michael.
Kim? Was it really you?
Maybe. Or maybe you're going crazy. Of course it's me, silly. You want to touch me to make sure I'm real?
Who is having more fun than Marcia Cross? Nobody.
Honestly, she is the best.
While
Michael carefully passes his hands over her, she tells him she was in a coma for months and that her mother just told him she was dead because she wanted Michael out of her life and that she would die if she knew that Kimberly was there talking to him right now. And he goes from carefully passing his hands over like her chest and her shoulders to like roughly grabbing her face and like mashing his fingers into it, which is, you know, very funny. So Michael's basically saying whatever he thinks he needs to in order to get her back into their old bed in clip 15.
If I'd known, I'd have been there for you.
It's all right, really.
You okay? I mean, I feel
I'm fine. Good as new.
Mistakes.
Now I have to go.
No, not yet.
I have a big day at the hospital tomorrow. I'll see you there. Sleep tight.
Always leave him wanting more. So the way that it's shot as she wanders toward the glass doors in her raincoat and with the lightning still going, it makes her look like a wraith. It's like surprisingly arty for this show, I have to say.
Yeah.
Someone
and
thought
you
about
almost,
it.
I almost did think that they were going to have her sort of like pass through and have him sort of be like, and like shake his head a little bit because mm-hmm. she really does look like she was shot like on different film.
Yeah.
From where that, yeah, so it's very, like, Ring-esque. Also, Marcia Cross is a complete pro. Yeah.
Totally.
It's pretty creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because they're alone, like, you don't totally know if she is real, even though he
yeah.
touches her. It's well done. So yeah. After commercials, it's the next morning, and Michael's irritably waking up to Sydney kissing on him with her hair falling over his face, and he shoves her away and staggers out of bed to go back to the living room and to the spot where he was standing with Kimberly the night before, or was he? Obviously, she's not there now, and when he goes back to the bedroom, Sydney apologizes for being so late the night before, offers to make it up to him now, sexfully, presumably, but... He has an early meeting, and so he slams the bathroom door on her, and she's bummed to see their old dynamic returning so fast. And speaking of old dynamics, Michael is almost shy as he goes looking for Kimberly at the hospital and finds her in the lounge, moving her stuff into her old locker and enthusing about picking up where they left off as though the last month, 5 months never happened. And if you watch this episode again, you have to just see in every shot how much Marcia Cross is just, like, tossing her hair. She, like, really makes her hair... a focal point of her performance, like yeah. way more than she ever did before. It's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before they pick up where they left off, there's something she needs to know. Clip 16.
Well, I don't know how to say this, but when I heard that you had died, you know, grief and the confusion. Well, it's just... I got married.
Really? To whom?
Yeah, to whom? I married Sydney. Now, the way it happened, that was complicated. Well, it's kind of hard to explain. It was blackmail, really.
Doesn't matter why you did it, Michael.
Just gonna have to get rid of her.
Maybe I didn't make myself clear last night. I've come back to claim what's mine, and you're the first thing on my list.
So then she kisses him, and he's like, holy shit, and leaves, and then she does crazy eyes at him for like 10 minutes out of the scene, and it's amazing. So
yeah.
Good.
She's actually underplaying this relative to what we all think we remember about this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some crazy eyes for sure, but it's like so much less than it could be. And
it is.
It will be. So, yeah. Well done.
Yep. So Michael goes home for lunch, which turns out to be the most gigantic bowl of tuna salad you ever did see. Like, it's like in an actual, like a green salad bowl and seems to have been made with like, a cafeteria-sized can of tuna. It's so much more tuna than you could possibly yeah. imagine. Certainly too much for one person, which is all that was there. But anyway.
I mean, is it like tuna salad Tuesdays at the sex work company?
Well, she retired.
We had leftovers.
She said okay. the hotel party was her last hurrah. So, you know, it's just her.
Maybe she brought it home?
Maybe. Well, no, everything else is all laid out. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Tomato slices and everything.
All right. It's true. Sydney's pleasantly surprised to see him. She thinks. Clip 17.
Maybe you'd like something more nourishing.
We have to talk.
What's wrong, sweetheart?
Let me put that another way. I have something to tell you. I want a divorce, and I want you out of my house today.
Michael, this is not a funny joke.
It's no joke. It's time to pack it up. I'll front you for a hotel tonight if you need it.
Stop it, Michael, please. We're doing so great. I'm the doctor's wife. I'm going to take care of you, remember?
What can I say? It's like I woke up from a bad dream, and now I want to start all over.
Maybe you're forgetting, but I can do you a lot of harm. I don't want to, but if you keep acting like this, then believe me, I will. Let's forget about this conversation. I'll just make you a sandwich.
Put your clothes in a bag and pack them up and leave now.
Are you crazy? I will ruin you, you smug piece of scum.
Come on, Sydney, now let's not start calling names.
Everything you've got is gone. Are you ready for that, Michael? Everything. You're going to prison and you're going to be the wife. Get it? I control what happens to you.
Oh, no, not anymore.
We'll see about that, wise ass. We'll see.
Okay, we could do without the prison rape joke.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a different time. But the rest of that, it's like, this is truly Michael coming into full flower. And he knows something she doesn't. But it's still rough on our girl.
I mean, also, see my previous comments, Ray not buying her as a competent madam. Like, this is an emotional 7-year-old.
Yes, for sure. Anyway, she stomps out and the scene ends with him like loosening his tie and then looking at the bowl of tuna like, maybe.
So good. He's like, well, it's here. So am I.
Yeah. She laid out all the fixins. I mean, gotta eat.
Is that Zingerman's rye? Why not?
Sure enough, Sydney immediately makes good on her threat because in Michael's very next scene, he, Matt, and Sydney are all in the lounge in the hospital with a detective there to try to clear up some of the accusations made by Michael's wife, Flip 18.
So, on the night of the accident when Dr. Shaw lost her life, had you been drinking?
A little bit. It was nothing.
But something if you were drunk. It's vehicular homicide.
I'm divorcing the woman. She's making it all up.
Do you have access to the records concerning blood alcohol levels of admitted patients?
No, not really, no.
He signed a confession. My sister will attest to everything.
He paged me, doctor?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me, detective, but doesn't a homicide usually mean there's a deceased person? This is Dr. Kimberly Shaw, the woman this little twit is saying I killed.
Hi there, Sid.
Kimberly? What?
Finally, the reaction I've been looking for.
LOL.
So good. But it does lead to the question of, like, was there a death certificate? Because Kimberly was totally not dead. Like, how could there be a homicide investigation? I mean, I guess there wasn't a homicide investigation. They thought she just died. But presumably, if they're even following up on this, there would have to be a death certificate somewhere.
Yeah, right? You'd think.
This is the kind of thing they don't want us to think about in a nighttime soap opera, I suppose.
They don't, because it's a soap. And yes, clearing aside the bubbles, let's move on.
Indeed. Out at dinner that night, Michael gloats about what a great prank he and Kimberly pulled on Sydney. She pointedly asks how his drink is, and when he tries to get another one before they've even put their food orders in, she countermands him with the server, and he somehow doesn't get why. Clip 19.
Babe, what's going on?
I told you I want to eat.
You're mad at me about Sydney, aren't you? Look, I don't blame you. Let it out. I deserve it. I just hope you can forgive me.
I do forgive you.
Okay. So, what were you thinking about me all that time? You know, when you were hurt?
That you deserted me. You didn't, did you?
No, I didn't. I love you.
Damn it. Damn it.
That's it. Come on, tell me how you feel.
Michael, shut up. Shut up, okay? It's got nothing to do with Sydney. It's my head. I've been getting these headaches occasionally, all right?
Sure. Sweetheart, sure.
Okay. Pride of Hamilton Med. Way to have no follow-up questions.
A Also, I mean, perfect opening for her to be like, I don't think you should drink so much at dinner since the last time you did. I almost died. Hello, but whatever. I guess she's playing the long game, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Also, just for the record, sometimes people just get bad headaches and it doesn't mean they are cuckoo. For the record.
I mean, present company excluded, of course.
True. Jane actually looks good for once when she opens her door to Sydney wanting to talk. Jane would actually not like to talk, turns out. So Sydney starts crying and Jane is like, ugh. And then Sydney has to tell her what's been going on because somehow, even though it happened at least one day ago, Matt did not call Jane from work to be like, guess the fuck what? Kimberly is not actually dead, but okay, fine.
Time to revise the affidavits.
Yeah, seriously. So Jane has no empathy for how things have ended for Sydney, given how they started, and would rather set fire to herself than let Sydney stay with her. And Sydney sobs as she realizes there's no one left who cares about her, but Jane tells her to have her nervous breakdown somewhere else and slams the door in her face, which Sydney had coming, frankly.
Yeah.
Allison and Billy are boringly kissing in the courtyard when Sydney comes down on some other day and speaks for us all in clip 20.
Sydney, what are you doing here?
I live here again, thanks to Amanda. Like it's any of your business. I'm getting a divorce, okay? Like the two of you will someday.
Back on her feet.
Yeah. Didn't hate that.
Nope. And at the beach, Michael and Kimberly fuck, Michael approvingly calling her an animal. Afterwards, Kimberly staggers into the bathroom and whatever Kimberly is taking for her headaches is not helping. And I well remember those pre-Imitrex tablet days and I relate. I mean, I know it's not that, but still. She goes into her purse for more pills and sucks them down, evidently still suffering, and gazes at herself in the mirror and then rips off her wig. Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah.
TV history is made. Obviously, there are GIFs of this and the moment before when she just looks like she has a bad headache, which I will be using for my personal use.
But she just, I mean, the bedlam that broke out in amazing. The Campus Club TV room when Stephanie Lucianovic's husband, I don't think they had even met yet, was like, she's going to rip her wig off. And we're like, shut up, Mark. You're not even really watching this. Sure enough, Dr. Mathrock called it. And then it was so loud in that TV room, like popcorn flying. Oh, it was the best. What a great moment.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it truly is a part of TV history. Like, that's not an exaggeration.
No.
It's glorious. Iconic. Before we wrap things up, however, we have a message from Tamar.
Speaking of great art, you may recall many moons ago in an episode about a season 4 episode of Beverly Hills 90210.
Wow.
Lonely Palette podcast host Tamar challenged us to reimagine the credits cast as famous works of art. Now that challenge is back, but for the Melrose Place credits cast. You may also recall that last time I anointed Donna Martin Botticelli's The Dearth of Penis, and I should have retired from public life immediately thereafter. Since I'm never going to top that.
It was very good. But we're forging ahead with legendary artworks for everyone in the opening Melrose credits, plus Sydney and Kimberly. In credits order.
Let's begin with Jane Mancini, The Garden of Earthly Designs by Hieronymus Bosch.
Michael Mancini, Saturn Devouring the Scenery by Goya.
Matt Fielding, of course, is Edward Hopper's Night Hugs.
Jake Hansen, Thomas Gainsborough's The Blue Collar Boy.
Billy Campbell, that classical sculpture, Apollo Belvedere.
Allison Parker, Eeyore de Marat by Jacques-Louis David.
Joe Reynolds is Girl with a Pearl-Handled Derringer by Vermeer.
Amanda Woodward, Da Vinci's Vitruvian Mini.
It's tempting to go with a Titian for Sid, like the gumption of the Virgin, but instead it's Michelangelo's The Creation of Madame.
And last but not least, Kimberly Shaw as that much maligned masterwork by Cassius Marcellus Coolidge, Wigs Playing Poker.
I just laughed at my own joke. Bad form. Thanks for making me do this, Tamar. Listeners, find your terms of art with the Lonely Palette podcast by visiting lonelypalette.com.
And now, let us name our episode MVP. Kimberly!
Yeah. Marcia Cross. Marcia Cross.
Yep. Both valid, I think. Amazing. So good.
So good.
Oh, I thought Dave was weighing in to say whoever made the tuna. least valuable player. Chaz.
Oh, yeah. Whoever made Chaz's socks.
Yep.
You're both wrong. It's the guy mowing the lawn next door.
Legit. Next time on Again With This, Lauren's out of the joint, which means Sydney's out at the top of Lauren's sex work empire. Allison's out of sorts because Hillary's cheese-all-se Chaz is slacking off at his nepotism higher job, and also because she's Allison. And Sarah's out of an abusive relationship and on to rooming with Joe. You'll be out of Pepto after you check out the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You'll find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, available in whatever format you like. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or set your DVR for our spinoff, our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Deadbeat Mom Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Disputed Wedding Gown Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is wise ass David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh.
What?